This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known people about their lives, their careers, and those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Perry-Phillips, and with me is a very chirpy and chipper Jim Daly.
Hello, I'm laughing because we're about to read some tweets out, and we've been reading them off air, and they're very funny. And yeah, they've got me in a good mood for today. I'm in a good mood anyway. We've just recorded our episode with our wonderful guest this week, Nazanin Ghaffar, and it's been such a fun episode to do.
Yeah,
so I'm in a really, really good mood. And actually, I'd forgotten. We talk about it. Obviously, she presents the weather, and we were talking about how weather can make you feel good or bad depending on how it is, and it can really affect your mood. But actually, I've just remembered as well. Like when you have all our episodes are really good, but when you have one particular where you laugh a lot, actually, so we record ours in the morning. It sets you up for the rest of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Puts you in a really good mood. So yeah, I'm feeling very chipper and buoyant actually after that. And then, and some of these tweets you got to read out are very funny. I've also got to close all the tabs on my laptop because we went off on so many tangents with Nazanin that I had to keep Googling stuff. So I'm having to now sort of, actually, I'm not closing that one because I actually want to buy one of those. But I am having to close.
What, a saxophone?
No, no, we only got one of those. Got to find that to play out the song at the end. It was a good episode. Really.
Oh, it was a brilliant episode. I love Nazanin. She's become a good friend, and it's lovely to have her on the podcast. And yeah, she's great company. And you know, as British people, we love talking about the weather. And we talk about the weather quite a lot on this episode, as Nazanin is a weather presenter and obviously has been trained at the Met Office as well. So she does know what she's talking about. She's not just a broadcaster. And it was brilliant. It was a brilliant conversation about all aspects of her life, but also about her love for weather and all things weather.
I do feel a bit bad that we made her talk about work essentially for an hour, but she's so nice. She, even if she didn't want to, she was very, very engaging on it. And actually that point about being trained at the Met Office is interesting because from what she made it sound like when you started out, you didn't really have to do that.
No.
You are just a presenter, but actually she was really keen to make sure she knew what she was talking about, which I think sort of goes some way to show the sort of person she is, that she wanted to make sure do things right. But that's interesting. A lot of the stuff, if you are interested in weather, this is going to be the best episode we've ever done. Yeah. Because it's actually, there's a lot of really good insight into weather presenting. And as I said, I've got a few tabs open from things that Nazanin has suggested weather related. So yeah, very, very interesting. Mm. But just a lovely person as well. It's so easy to talk to.
Really
just
lovely.
We've gone off on loads of tangents, and it's just, yeah, it's been a really, really good episode. I'm just smiling thinking about it.
Yeah. Oh no, it was a real treat, and thank you very much for coming on, Nazanin.
Shall we read some tweets before we crack on with the episode?
I think we should
tease them at the start of the episode. So obviously, was it last week or week before? Hang on. A few weeks ago, the Alex Horn episode came out, and it's been very popular. Really struck a chord with our listeners, as it would, because Alex is fantastic.
Yeah, one element of it has really struck a chord with people.
One element, the element being the Craig Johnson element, former footballer / predator creator.
If you haven't listened to the episode, I'm trying to. I actually myself, because it was a while ago we recorded this. I'm trying to remember how we got onto the subject of Craig Johnson. I was talking about predator boots, but. He's a Liverpool fan, right? So Alex is a Liverpool fan. So how did we?
It might have been talking about maybe watching Craig Johnson when he was, or was it the football shirts behind me? And we were talking about football shirts.
I don't know, man. But it's my fault. I think I brought up Craig Johnson.
Well, I'm glad you did because it's really struck a chord to people. So here's a tweet from Chris Ryan. Chris says, "I used to work in an Oxford Street football shop 20 years ago. And we once had a post Predator, Craig Johnson come in. It's like, what? It's like, where are they now? To show the Reebok execs the different tech in the boots. They did not understand, nor did he replicate the same success. Poor Craig. Poor Craig. But thank you, Chris, for that tweet. That really, really tickled me. So
yeah. Well, I've got another one here from Siri. She also is... listened to the Alex Horn episode and said this was enjoyable, a total blast from the past too, with talk of Craig Johnston. So his name's just making me laugh now. His mum was a teacher when I was 8, and I still remember him coming over from the high school into our class to ask his mum for money. Boy, was he in trouble. On the make, what, even then,
why is he in trouble? And I wonder if, so how old is Craig Johnston at this point? Was he 8? Was he older?
Yeah.
Was the money for football?
I'm thinking, was he an adult?
Maybe like, he was an adult.
Sorry, Mum, these Predator boots are costing, these prototypes are costing me an absolute fortune.
I need some
mate.
More plastic for the boots to make them spin.
Sorry, terrible accents.
Awful accent, awful, yeah. Awful apologies. But anyway, Siri, thank you for that tweet. That's lovely. I've got one more if it's okay. And it's
please tell me it's about Craig Johnson.
It is about Craig Johnson. It's about me and Craig Johnson. It's a guy from Ian Williams.
Right.
And he says, Jim, I can't believe... Hi, Ian, sorry. I can't believe you don't remember Craig Johnson.
I mean, we couldn't believe it. I mean, Alex and I were dumbfounded.
It came back to me during the episode.
Yeah.
Mainly Predator related. Ian has said, I would have said how I was enjoying the podcast with Alex, but I had to stop to tweet this. So clearly he's been... I'm sorry, Ian. I've clearly offended you with my lack of Craig Johnson knowledge. He's then gone on to actually include a photo. I mean, the hair is fantastic.
Oh, he had incredible hair back in the day.
Do you know what? I think we need to probably reach out and try and get Craig on the podcast now that we've done this, because I think... probably got a very interesting story, actually.
He has.
If anyone knows him, let's make it happen.
Well, I'm going to search him up and see if he's on Twitter, and then I can say he's been a huge uptake in interest in you interest. And your story since our episode with Alex Horn. I mean, the rest of the Alex Horn episode is excellent because Alex is an excellent guest.
It's really good.
But the
good,
Craig
yeah.
Johnston stuff at the beginning has obviously been a highlight for many of our listeners.
Oh dear. Right. Craig, we're sorry. Please come on the podcast. I'm sorry I didn't know who you were. And also I still wear Predator boots. So there you go. So the legacy is
do you? They've got the rubber bits on them.
Yeah,
the fins.
They've been through various sort of forms of evolution, and they went away for a bit and then they came back. And I think the very new ones, they're sort of back a bit spikier. But I got a free pair when I was working at the Mirror back in 2014, and they were called the Predator Instinct, I think. I had them for 5 years. No, yeah, for almost 5 years. They were so good.
Fair
so part. Comfy. And then I've bought some more recent ones recently. They don't quite feel the same. So I've actually started going on eBay recently to try and find an old pair of Predator Instinct. If anyone got a pair of Predator 2014 Instincts in size 10, I will happily buy them off you. So please get in contact, because they're the best boots I've ever worn. Anyway, I think we should get on with this. We have really, really sidetracked. Let's get on with this week's episode. Unfortunately, I just want to say, there's no Craig Johnston talk on this week's episode. So in case you've come for the Craig Johnston Predator talk, we've moved on. But we do have the wonderful Nazneen Ghaffar, and she's just one of the nicest people. So I think we should just get straight into it. So here is just the fantastic and lovely Nazneen Ghaffar on the Blank Podcast.
Well, I have recorded some of that Facebook. It's a funny thing that we've become so excited about Facebook Marketplace.
Well, during the pandemic, it was quite difficult. You weren't really allowed to. You had to kind of leave it on the doorstep, step away, look out the window, and, you know, no cash, PayPal, all that kind of stuff. There's quite good stuff around my way, though, yeah. I'm going to go and pick up some Victorian tiles for my front door porch area. I'm really excited about it.
That is exciting. Have they got a pattern on them?
Yeah, they've got really like lovely, funky, colourful pattern, Victorian ones, because I live in a Victorian semi-detached and I'm trying to bring back some Victorian-ness to it. My husband's like, there's nothing wrong with our porch. Why?
Yeah, but yeah.
Are we? But you know.
There's nothing wrong like with our table. Large table, but.
But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
That's that is exciting. I think that it is nice to get like, and also I think when you move into a sort of period property, it is nice to reinstate some of those things that were there originally. We were in a 1930s, yeah. We're in a 1930s house, and when we moved in, all the doors had been interior doors had been replaced, the front door had been replaced with sort of modern, kind of very cheap doors as well. You know, those awful kind of almost like cardboard. And so we've replaced all the inner doors. The fireplaces, you can see one just behind me there, look.
Oh, love that. In the bedroom. Love it.
Yeah, so they were all covered up with like UPVC. They just like covered, yeah, random. So we like ripped all those off. So I think it's nice to restore those features that are so beautiful.
Exactly. I'm with you on that one. And bigger tables. I'm with your wife on that one. Oh, no, smaller.
She wants it's a smaller table, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. You need room to be able to shuffle around.
Now, Nazanin, you're from Tunbridge Wells originally. Is that right?
I am indeed, yep.
And I know Jim's got some history in Tunbridge Wells.
Tunbridge Wells comes up on the pod quite a lot, doesn't it? I can't remember the last person we spoke to about Tunbridge Wells. I went to school in Tunbridge Wells. I grew up in...
Oh, which school did you go to?
St Gregory's.
Ah, yes, I remember
which is,
that.
Next to the grammar school, which is basically sort of the down. I think it was the only comprehensive there, I think.
There's Bennett as well, Memorial.
Bennett Memorial. Yeah.
Another very good school.
They wore green, didn't they? They all wore green at Bennett.
Yes.
Yes. They're very climate conscious at Bennett. I grew up in Edenbridge, which is a town about 10 miles away, I guess, 10, 15 miles away. Tunbridge Wells comes up a lot on the podcast.
It does randomly, yeah.
Yeah, it does. How did you find Tunbridge Wells?
I love Tunbridge Wells. Growing up in Tunbridge Wells was... So I grew up in Tunbridge Wells, mid-80s onwards. As a brown girl, it was a bit... different for me. I think it's changed a lot since then, but I was the only girl that was different looking compared to everyone else in my class, in my whole school, in fact. So it was easy to spot me in the school photo. But I really enjoyed Tunbridge Wells. It's a great town because it's got good shopping centre, a lot of history. You're near to London, but you're out enough to have like the countryside, beautiful parks, etc. School life was good. I did feel different, but that's probably around the time I was growing up. It wasn't so multicultural back then. I was born and bred in Tunbridge Wells, but my parents are Iranian. We had Iranian values. So growing up, you know, in an Iranian household, we didn't do Christmas. I was saying this to my husband the other day and he finds it really shocking, but it wasn't part of our family culture. So we didn't have Christmas and Christmas Day, and everyone would go back talking about what Christmas presents they received, etc. And I didn't have that. But, you know, it's fine. At the time, you think it's a bit sad, I'm missing out. But really now I understand, you know, my parents were bringing us up the way that they knew how they were brought up. But I have loads of friends I'm still connected to there. And I ended up working in Tunbridge Wells for a while as well, in weather, so at the BBC there. So it's, a great town. When I was a teenager, I was a bit like, I want to move to London. It's so sad. Don't want to live here anymore. But now, as I get older with my little one, I kind of see myself perhaps moving back towards there because it's actually a really lovely, lovely town.
It's definitely one of those places where, and it's probably the same for all sort of home counties places, where I think growing up you think, this place is so boring. Oh, there's nothing to do here. And London's not that far away, and like there's definitely a stark contrast between someone like Talmadge Wells and London. And I was always desperate to move to London, and my friends were there. And I don't think it's unfair to say that Talmadge Wells wasn't a particularly diverse place. I don't know what it's like now because it's been a long time since I've been back. But you could pop up to London for the day, and suddenly you're in this multicultural, diverse, exciting place, and it's a world away from Tunbridge Wells and probably anywhere that's like it. So yeah, I definitely got that vibe as well and was desperate to get out. But you're so right, the older you get, you suddenly realize that places out of town in the countryside are actually really appealing, and you can see why people move there and start families and stuff, because life is a bit calmer maybe, and there is more green space. And yeah, it's just funny how our values change as we grow up. I've moved to a place called Chesham in Buckinghamshire, and it's basically like Tunbridge Wells, but the other side of London. Like, it's not, it feels like where I sort of grew up again, but just the other side of town. So yeah, but it is, we just, our values just change, I think, as we grow up. Or maybe not our values, but things we look for, I think, in our daily
needs.
Life.
Yeah.
Our needs. Yeah.
And actually, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of people that are friends I have in London just decided to up and move, and they're really happy now that they actually made that move at the time, because, you know, London became like nothing we've ever seen it before. You know, it was completely quiet. There was nothing to do. And they all have families, and then realised, actually, what are we doing here? Let's move out. And I think, currently I'm in Surrey, so I'm sort of in between Tunbridge Wells and London. And I moved before the pandemic. And I love it because, especially with the little one, you've got so much green space, going out to the woods, looking for bugs and playgrounds and nice local farms to go and visit and things like that. You don't get so much of that in London. London, I think, is fine when you're young, but as you get older with little ones, I think it's better to be out in the countryside. Personally, that's what I think anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely being out here during, I mean, also the pandemic has been mad, but like, it's given me an appreciation of how lucky I am. It's like space becomes a commodity. And I mean space as in like garden space, not like literally space like in the sky like Neil Armstrong. But it becomes, suddenly you realise how lucky you are if you have any. And we moved into a house here where we had a garden. In our previous place we didn't. And living in London, obviously, like very few people have gardens, especially if you're renting. And so suddenly it became really, and we've got a little one as well. She turns two on Tuesday. And just suddenly felt so grateful to have space. And really, especially with the pandemic, and as you say, everyone's stuck in the house, it made me really sit back and just feel, yeah, very thankful that I have this opportunity and space, and just, yeah, lucky, really. I think it was a real chance to sort of count my lucky stars, that she can play in the garden and feel safe, and I can go for runs up the road, and it's all countryside, and might not even see a car on my run. Like, it's just all those things you just don't think about when you're younger. Because when you're younger, like, you want to be somewhere exciting. God, I loved living in London when I was younger. I could go out if I wanted to. There was always a gig, or there was always something happening. Now, if I've got there's a gig or something, I have to like psychologically build up to it for about a week. I think that's just old age. But yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling appreciative, I think, at the moment.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one.
I do wonder actually as well, like, I mean, I'm quite lucky. I've lived in the same place all my life. I've never moved out. And thinking about when you've got children and sort of maybe trying to replicate some of what you went through, or the sort of places that you lived with them, you know, and sort of getting them. I mean, it's been really nice. My kids go to the same parks that I went to when I was their age and stuff like that. And I do wonder, I've got friends who've moved back to the area again since they've had children, because they enjoyed the area when they were younger, and they obviously wanted their children to experience the same thing, go to the same schools as they went to, that kind of stuff. So I do wonder if there's something in that a little bit about how when we get older, we kind of want to replicate our own childhood experiences, if they've been good ones, with our own children. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Even when I go to visit my parents, I still take my little one to the same park and just want to see her reaction. Was it the same as mine? You know, that kind of thing. And it is nice, and it's nostalgic in a way.
Yeah.
And it's like you're growing up again and just seeing the world with fresh eyes again. It's really lovely.
Yeah, it's one of the joys of being a parent, I think, those sort of moments that we can we can relive our own childhoods through our children's eyes.
Especially, like, I'm desperate for my daughter to get into football, because football's a big part of my life, and it brought me closer to my dad, and it helped me meet a lot of my best friends. Giles and I sort of know each other through football, I guess, sort of loosely as well. Mm. So it's brought me closer to a lot of really important people. So I want her to be in it. But I guess in a way, that's also because I want to relive seeing football through a young person's eyes again. I went to the football the other day with a couple of my best mates, and one of them brought his boy, who's just turned 4, I think. And it was his first match. And it was amazing watching the football with him and, like, talking to him about it and hearing him trying to work out what's happening on the pitch. And I don't think there was a goal, actually. Oh, no, there might have been one goal. So, yeah, it is. I think we're always sort of chasing that youthfulness, aren't we? Or that nostalgia of, and when you have children, it's a sort of perfect chance to do that. I'm slightly worried. I don't think my daughter will be into football, because during football lessons she mostly picks the ball up and runs away with it. So maybe rugby.
Or basketball.
I'll be honest, there's one other dad whose daughter also isn't that fast. There's quite a lot of girls in the class, which is really nice, but this other girl doesn't either, and he always comes up to me and goes, well, then neither of them are going to be into football, are they? And I'm like, all right, Steve. No, she is going to be into football, okay? Don't lump my daughter in with yours, okay? She will be. But actually, no, the evidence suggests she probably won't.
She's expressing herself.
Yeah, she is. It's cute. She does often say, football, daddy, football. But then when we get there, she just doesn't want to kick the ball. But I think she loves running around. She likes being with the other kids. And obviously, that's all part of... Sport is a good way of sort of teaching you sort of social skills as well. So it's all part of it. But if she could kick it in the ball if she could get in the goal a few more times, that'd be great.
She's only 2.
I know. So thinking, much pressure.
She's only just started learning to walk.
There's a couple of kids in the group. One lad, he lives across the road from us. He's probably a bit older, so he's probably 2.5. He can kick it, like, really. His dad must have been doing drills with him in the garden.
Drills.
He can properly, his technique is so good. I'm so impressed. So I don't know what, I need to find out what his
dad's secret is. You're getting competitive, Dad.
I am.
I was going to say, this is, there's a fine line, man. You need to reel that in a little bit.
I would say that was 80% Jess. It's nice to see her running around and enjoying being with the kids.
So, what were you into as a kid? What were you interested in? Did you like school? I mean, were you academic?
I did like school. I was academic. I wasn't the cleverest, but I liked being at school. I loved the social aspect of school. I actually loved football, bizarrely. And actually, at one point, I remember, I was thinking of this the other day, that my dad was... My parents were big on... studying, doing education, etc. But even back then, my dad was the kind of parent that was like, just because you're a girl doesn't mean you can't do anything. Yeah. And I started playing football in the playground in the lunch breaks, and the teacher called him in one day and said, look, she's a girl, she can't play football, it's not safe for her. And my dad just sat there and said, my daughter will do whatever she wants, she will play football, I'm not telling her to stop. And I just carried on, and then I went to secondary school, I went to Twiggs. And they had a football team there. I loved playing football. But then as I got into my later stages of teenager years and boys and stuff, I kind of stopped playing, really. It's a shame, but I actually really enjoyed football. I don't know why. I think I like the competitive nature. Well, all sports are competitive. I don't know. I loved football. I did play a bit of tennis, but I wasn't that great. I wasn't majorly sporty, but I did get involved. I loved rounders. Rounders was my favourite thing at school.
Rounders is the best.
Yeah, it's the best.
We did rounders at our primary school. It was very competitive. There were only 9 of us in our class, I think, at primary school, but I think we must have played
against... How did you manage rounders?
I don't know. Maybe we played against the teachers. I'm not sure, but I remember being very competitive and everyone being obsessed with winning rounders. I don't even know how we did that, but yeah, it didn't continue into secondary school. Once I went to secondary school to St. Greg's, it was all football and rugby and, rounders disappeared,
hockey.
Unfortunately.
Hockey.
I don't know if they did hockey.
I did hockey. I didn't like hockey.
No,
it's aggressive.
Never got
it's quite aggressive hockey.
Yeah. Hockey was actually quite hard.
Yeah.
And I always used to get my ankles bashed. And where there's funny, like, nah.
Well, it's, I mean, yeah, I think when I went to university, the hockey teams were the most, choose my words carefully, off the wall, I guess, is a good way. Like, they were the most, the most intense, I think. You know, if you're going out in the sort of the sports social societies, they were the ones that were doing the sort of slightly questionable initiation stuff.
Oh, really? You think rugby would be like...
No, it's hockey. Sort of, yeah. It's definitely hockey. And then you're giving these people wooden sticks as well, which I just think is... very risky, I think, asking for trouble. Hockey is a lot more intense than people realize. But I tell you what, it's very enjoyable to watch, like watching it during the Olympics recently. So it's a very, very enjoyable, very quick game to watch. I don't follow it really that well, but it's an intense game to watch, intense on and off the field, I think.
You guys, what were your favourite sports? Am I allowed to ask questions?
Yeah, this is conversation. It's not, don't worry, it's not an interview. Football, I guess the regular kind of football. Athletics was my big thing, though. That was the only one thing at secondary school in particular, was the only thing I was sort of okay at was running. And sort of doing 200 metres, 400 metres. It was the thing relay. I got into, like, the school and the relay, I managed to get into the school sort of team, if you sort of mean, like the after school competing against other schools and stuff.
No, I'm just saying, and you still like running now, don't you? So
I still do more like, I guess, sort of like cross-country type stuff, but I can't sprint anymore.
the legs won't allow it.
No, but no, I loved that kind of stuff.
What was it like being, was it quite intense?
Are you talking to me now?
The running. Just talking to myself. Jim, what was it?
Was it intense?
It was kind of intense. I just did a one-on-one interview. What were the other kids like? Was it quite an intense? I never did athletics.
There was a lot of pressure. To be honest, there was the PE teachers were quite hard. There was quite a lot of to get high achievement, particularly like they wanted the school to win all the athletics kind of meetings and stuff. So there was a lot of intense, And I remember they used to try and get us to, they would bribe people to do. So if there was like a school trip, for example, you wouldn't be able to go on it unless you competed for the school kind of stuff. I remember they went to Welsh camp and one guy he said, if you don't play, he hated rugby. And they said, if you don't play rugby for the school team, you won't be able to go on the school trip. It's just really horrible. So this guy had to turn up every week to play rugby and he absolutely hated it. So there was stuff like that, quite coercive. Yeah, I'm not sure. Times have changed, Jim. I don't think they would get away with it now.
I don't think that's allowed.
this was the late 80s, 90s. So I think it was not viewed as badly as it would be now.
Harsh.
A bit, that poor kid. I hated rugby as well. I've got a vivid memory of one rugby lesson where they got the pads out and we had to run into each other and I guess shoulder into someone holding a pad or something. Is that a rugby training technique?
Yeah.
And you're doing that. And the biggest guy, I was holding the pad and I was quite a small, weedy kid. And I was holding the pad and the biggest guy in class ran into me as hard as possible, knocked me flying. And I just remember sort of everyone being around me and the teacher being like, oh shit, please be okay. Are you okay, Jim? Oh, thank God he's okay. But I already hated rugby before that, but that put me off rugby pretty much for life. It was,
At my school, they used to, the PE teachers were quite sadistic. We used to, when it was a frosty morning, they'd make us do army crawls in the frost. For rugby, we used to have to do, so you know when you do you form a ruck, which is on the floor and the ball, you'd have to kneel in the frost and then the people would run towards you and you'd tackle them to the floor. It was horrendous. I'm hoping that both the PE teachers at that school have been struck off now because they were really horrible people.
Because because sport really should be like, even if you're not like into a certain sport, it's mostly about sort of working with the team, getting exercise, having fun. Really should be one of the top, you know, top three kind of reasons to do it. I don't know. I just think there's environment sometimes in school sports where it's just, it doesn't, none of that is able to flourish, any of those things.
Yeah, that's true. My brother went to Skinners, and they were known. They were known for rugby, and my brother was not sporty at all. He was like in the E team, rugby E team reserves. He was that bad, and they he used to have such a hard time when it came to the sports lessons. And the only reason that they you know, kind of kept him on at the schools because he was so clever academically, but sporting wise he was not great at rugby. And they were so big on it because they wanted to uphold their position as a great school for rugby and stuff. So I think that's, yeah, I'm not sure if it's like that anymore, but yeah,
I think that was probably the same thing with our school. Lewis Priory was very much, I think they'd obviously had a track record of being very good at various different sports and team meets and stuff, and they just continued that in that vein and would do anything to anyone to get to that position. So, which is shame, really. But well,
we had in St Greg's, they obviously didn't care about their sporting achievements, because we had a new teacher came in about year 9, I think, or year 8. And he, like, really, there was a lot of like naughty boys played football. Well, I guess it's probably the same in most schools, but like not the naughty boys, and then they'd get away with it by being good at football. And he was like not into that at all. So he wanted to stamp his authority on the football team, and he got rid of all the naughty boys. You're out. If you're naughty in class, you're out of football. You're not playing. So kind of like the opposite of what your school, Giles. yes. So then he was like, right, I'm bringing all the nice boys into football. So I suddenly got promoted from like bench warmer to captain of the school football team, because I was okay, but also incredibly nice and probably a complete pushover and easy to coach. And then I just picked all my friends.
You were there for moulding, Jim.
I was there for moulding. Yeah. Yes, moulding me into a future champion. Didn't happen. So then I was just able to pick all my friends, and we went from having quite a good school team to probably the worst school team in Tunbridge Wells. We lost our first game, which I think was against Skinners, 10-1. But we were delighted we scored. Couldn't believe it. That was such an achievement for us. And then we actually got slightly better. I think we drew with Bennett away. I scored one that went in the top corner, which I still think about sometimes. And then I wasn't allowed to be captain of the school football team anymore because Mum and Dad wanted me to concentrate on my GCSEs. So I was banned football. Yeah. So,
but look at you now.
I was going to say, it feels like there's a slight sort of repressed resentment.
Could have been a champion, mate. Could have been a professional.
And that's why you're trying to get your daughter.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Now.
That's what I'm sort of, I know that we call this our therapy session every week, Jim, but I feel like there's definitely some repression here.
It's classic,
is now coming out
it?
Into your, she oh, will dear. Play football.
I'm such a cliche. Dad who never made it a football, forcing his daughter to get into football to make up for my lack of ability. Oh, such a cliche. To be fair, I ended up getting quite good GCSE, so it was probably the right decision. And we were terrible, so losing 10-1 each week was not that fun. But yeah, I can't remember the name of that PE teacher, but I always thought like that was quite, almost quite commendable, actually, to sort of keep the naughty boys out. He was really hot on actually just being a nice person. I can't remember his name, that's really bad, but yeah, different way of doing things.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. So you did at school, so you did a bit of sport. Were you ever thinking about going into, I mean, was broadcasting anything like, was that anything that you'd ever thought about at that time? Or was that not even in your, was it? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, I grew up, my dad is really into watching news, all news channels, everything. He still does it now. And,
sorry, Daddy, it's so funny because before we came on, I was talking about, Jim and I were just referencing 24-hour news and the fact that, do we need 24 hours of news? Half an hour of news in the
you
evening?
You do for my dad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was thinking, who's watching 24-hour news? We do not need that much. Half an hour in the evening is more than enough. So it's just so funny that you say that.
to be fair, back then there wasn't 24-hour news, I don't think, or it just started up. But it would be, you know, he'd watch BBC News, followed by ITV News, all the regional news, everything, all the time. And I would obviously be present in the room, and I'd watch it and think, this is so cool. Is this a job? You can do this. But then, sometimes, and it would annoy my dad a bit because I wasn't very good at it, I would mute the TV when the news was on, put on the teletext 888 and read it.
Amazing.
To him, and he'd be like, gritting his teeth, please stop. And try and read the news to him like that. I wasn't that interested in weather at that point, though. And my school was very into the academic subjects, doing sciences and stuff, which was all great. And I liked sciences, so I kind of went with it and did that at my GCSE, and I did geography as well. I kind of got into these subjects, but there was no way of doing anything, even like drama, nothing like that, at my school. It wasn't really known for that. In fact, I ended up doing my A-levels in theatre studies, one of them, but I did it at the boys' grammar school. So we were allowed to go, and not because it was a boys' school, but we were allowed to go across to do the lesson there and then come back again. So that was my way of trying to do something a bit media-related at that point, but there was no media-type subjects there. But one thing that I did do when I was, I think this was just before my A-levels while I was there, is that we were allowed to go and do some work experience, and they had lots of options already set up for us. And I saw there was an option to go to the BBC, the main BBC in London, and have a couple of days there learning about BBC and broadcasting. And I was desperate to do it, but the teachers allocated who they wanted to these work experiences. So I ended up doing like a couple of days at my like local dentist's, which was completely not what I wanted to do. Actually, it was during Wimbledon time as well. All the dentist was doing, he was just sat there watching Wimbledon and probably saw five patients the whole day. It was so boring. But then one of the girls that was going on the BBC one, because they were all staggered at different times during the summer holidays, she ended up being a bit unwell with, I think, glandular fever, something like that. Although I'd already done my dentist work experience, I asked, please, 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 can I take her place? Because her place will be empty. Please, can I go? So they allowed me, and I had the best time. Uh-huh. It was, to me, it was like, this is amazing. I can't, you know, finding out looking to studios and realizing they're a lot smaller than they look on TV, looking at the cameras, the lighting. And one part of it was going into the weather office at the BBC. And we even got to have a little go ourselves, stand in front of like the green screen and have a go. And at the time, Carol Kirkwood was there showing us. And I just remember saying to her at the end, I was like, how do I do this if I want to do this? I really want to do this when I'm older. She said, you've got to work very hard at school and do your degree in broadcasting and then write us a letter afterwards and we'll see what we can do. So I I didn't fully listen to her. I actually wanted to go and do a degree. I did my A-levels in the sciences, and I didn't do very well, and I didn't get into university, and I was really hugely gutted. All my friends were going to university and I didn't get in, so I didn't know really what to do at that point. And I thought, well, I'm gonna have to retake them. So I retook them. I went to West Kent College. West Kent was really nice. While also working part-time, went and did media studies there instead. And it was a really great course, and I got to even learn how to edit and things like that, and managed to get in. And then I went and did a broadcasting degree at a place called Ravensbourne, which is quite close to Kent. At the time, it was in Chislehurst, in Kent, actually. But it's moved to Greenwich now, next to O2. And did my degree there. But then when I came out and I wanted to get into doing TV stuff, I realised it's not that easy and I can't just jump into weather. I wrote to the BBC saying, hi, do you remember me? I came here when I was 15 and I really want to come and present the weather now. I've got a degree. And they were like, no.
Who told you that?
Yeah. No, you can't. You can't do that. Who told you? Carol?
Yeah.
Hello.
My mate Carol.
No. Yeah. So... yeah, that was a bit of a shock to the system. I ended up doing running. And in fact, before I went to university, I started running at, do you remember the programme, CD UK?
Yeah. Cat D.
Yeah. Yes, and Anton Deck.
That's right, yeah.
Did SMTV before it. Yeah, so I did a bit there. Weirdly, I am a huge Robbie Williams fan, like major. And he was in Wunderheim, and I made sure I was in the audience that when he was performing and he pulled me up on stage. It's on YouTube somewhere,
seriously?
But don't know.
Oh my word.
So embarrassing. It's so embarrassing.
So what did you have to stand there while he sang to you?
Yeah.
Because I always feel bad for the people that happens to, because it feels like it's sort of quite an awkward moment.
It was awkward, yeah. Because it was a new song. And for some reason in my head, I thought, I'll pretend I know the song. So I started pretending to mouth the words.
Oh, no.
He noticed, turned around and went, you don't even know the words, do you? And I panicked, so I just gave him a kiss.
Oh, my God. I have
the next
to
day
find
at school, this
video.
No, the next day at school, everyone was just like, are you okay, Ness?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's really weird.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
So were you a big Take
anyway,
That fan then?
I was a big Take That fan,
yeah.
but more of a Robbie Williams fan,
yeah, okay.
When he went solo. That kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Right, looks up on
I'm not really sure why I brought that bit up.
That's, wow, that's amazing.
It's great content, yeah. To be fair.
Yeah. And in terms of, I think work experience generally... apart from that moment, did help me learn a lot about the industry, made me realise I can't just jump into this role. Mm. And so eventually I went off as a runner on Deal or No Deal and I moved to Bristol.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I took
the
plunge.
Is that Endemol?
Endemol, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Endemol. And that was in Bristol. I think it's still there, I think. I don't know. And across the road was the ITV regional newsroom. And I applied for a role there to work in their library department where you would edit in any footage that's come in and stuff like that. Did that. And then I just kind of thought, now I'm here. Now's my chance to ask again. So I kept badgering the editor. I really love to present the weather. I really love to present the weather. Eventually she cracked. And she said, okay, fine. You can be our third cover, to cover for Alex Beresford of all people.
Oh, wow.
He taught me the ropes.
Oh, amazing.
And, I would do weekend cover as well as doing my job. So I was working like all the time, but I was 20 and I didn't really care. So I was doing that. But at the same time, I thought, I actually don't know enough about the weather. How can I, for me, I felt uncomfortable about it. They said, oh, don't worry. The Met Office will ring and tell you what you need to say. And I thought, I can't do this. And so I asked them, can you please let me go on courses? And because they're quite expensive, can you pay for them too? to go to the Met Office so I could learn more about this, so I can actually feel more comfortable telling people about the weather. So, funnily enough, they agreed. And, yeah, and it kind of went on from there. I went there a few weeks at a time, went to Exeter, learned about the weather more while doing the job. So that was really helpful. And then I saw a job in Tunbridge Wells come up at the BBC Southeast and went for that as a weather presenter. And yeah, then moved on to Sky.
Back home in Tunny Wells.
So, yeah.
So yeah. What is it particularly about the weather? I know you sort of saw on TV when you were younger and obviously you had that work experience and stuff and you saw Carol and stuff. What is it about the weather in particular? Was it the science of the weather itself, or was it the presenting stuff that seemed exciting to you? What was it that really engaged you, do you think?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. Yeah, presenting definitely excited me. I mean, I was excited by Blue Peter. I used to think that was such, that'd be such an awesome job and things.
That would be a good gig, wouldn't it, Blue Peter?
Yeah, Blue Peter, amazing. Here's one I made earlier. That's the line, isn't it?
Iconic,
yeah. But I think with the weather, the thing is, I was at a young age watching a lot of news involuntarily through my dad constantly watching the news. And I really liked science and I liked geography. And it kind of just, you know, and then I went to the BBC and did that work experience, had a go at that. And I thought, I'm not that serious a person. In fact, I did once get screen tested to do the news and then they immediately said, no, don't do it because you keep smiling and it's a murder. I couldn't do that. So I think it didn't fit my personality.
Yeah.
And I know weather can be very serious and extreme as well, of course, but I like the chit-chattiness of it. It's something that everyone talks about every day.
Yeah,
even through my years.
Yeah.
We live in a country where it changes all the time. Summer is not summer. Sometimes it's, you know, like autumn. It's like a winter's day and, you know, vice versa. So I think it's the typical British conversation. And it's something that everyone always wants to know about. And I fell in love with it when I got into it. I just thought, this is brilliant. People love the weather. Even over the years when I was, you know, going about my daily bits and bobs, going to shops and stuff, and people say, oh, how are you today? Yeah, good. Thank you. Oh, I heard it's raining tomorrow. You know, I think, is it because they've recognized me? Probably not. They're just having the chit chat because it's that thing, isn't it? Everyone talks about it. And I'd also be like, no, it's
do
not
you start,
raining tomorrow.
What I was going to say though, when people do that, do you start going, well, this isn't very good for listeners, but I'm sort of, but like, do you start going, well, over here is a high pressure in this area. Do you start reading the weather to them a little bit when the people stop in the street?
Do you know, we don't, weather presenters don't read auto cue.
What? Did you know? Sorry, that? I shouldn't have assumed.
Recite.
Really? Yes. So, like, someone in your ear or what?
No. What,
just
you mean
natural
someone's
knowledge.
Telling me what to say? No, it's just natural knowledge. It's just a chit chat, isn't it? It's just, I think that's another thing that, why I wasn't very good with the news reading side of things. I can read. It's just I wasn't very good at reading naturally.
Yeah,
it's a chit-chat thing. There's no auto cue. It's literally, and with the weather, I've worked at pretty much all of the channels, and it's always a case of, because it's at the end of the programme, you know, it's, whatever time is left, the weather has to fill it.
Yeah.
And you don't find out until literally seconds before. They're going to tell you, okay, can you do 2 minutes 34, please? And then it's you. And then you've just got to fill it.
So you've either got to be really concise if you've got no time, or be good at filling for a bit and maybe use more flowery language and more chatty.
I think for me, that what I learned over the years is to learn as much as possible in terms of what the forecast is, what the temperatures are like, what was it like yesterday, as much information as possible. And then when it comes to it, edit it as you go along, how much you want to give away. But I always try and go for the most extreme weather, where the rain is first and stuff like that. But yeah, there's no auto cue. What was your initial question? I've completely forgot.
I've got a follow-up question.
Oh, okay.
Basically, how this pod works is we forget what the normal question is and then we just like go off on tangents.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any moments where you've forgotten what the weather is and just been like, I'm just gonna say cloudy, probably cloudy, that's a good chance, and hope it's cloudy?
I don't think I have. Trying to think, you put me on the spot. I don't think I've ever forgotten, and anyway, if I did forget, I could always just turn around and see the graphics and then work it out.
Wait, you can see them?
Well, back in the day when I started, it was green screen. I couldn't see anything, but that was pre-recorded, so if I forgot, I could start again. But when it went, when I moved to the BBC, it was a video wall. At the BBC, it's a video wall. You can see what it is. At Sky, the same.
It's a piss.
I used to say to my friends, it's a bit like catchphrase. Just say what you see. Say what you see. So yeah, if I forget, I can actually, you know, turn around and have a quick kind of reminder from the graphics. But I don't think I've ever completely gone blank yet.
Oh, that's interesting. I assumed it was green screen. There you go. I'm learning today. I assumed it was all. And you,
some places are green screen.
So then, sorry, getting really technical. When you're pointing and stuff, you're just doing general because you might be pointing at the wrong part of the UK.
Well, no,
or
so it's weird. So usually the people that still use green screen, it's for recordings because it's really hard to do green screen live. But there's also a monitor sort of in, oops, my AirPod fell out. One second.
There you go. That's a live malfunction. Okay. Live on air.
Yeah. There we go. My ear holes aren't very big. When you're doing it with a green screen, what it is that you've got a monitor next to the camera.
Right, yeah.
So you can kind of see where you're pointing, but you don't want to be looking at the monitor because then your eye line will be looking away from the camera lens. So you sort of glance.
Yes.
You might see presenters sort of slightly glance away because they want to see where they're pointing. But when I first started, I found green screen really hard. So I would just generally wave my hands every now and then.
Yeah. But wait, also, wouldn't the monitor be reversed as to where? So if you're. So if you're...
No.
So if you're going left...
It's a...
this makes great... It's great for listeners, what you're doing. But keep going.
Because I would
keep
get worried if I'm going left. Yeah, no, my arms would go right. I don't know. I think I'd panic.
Looks like you're sort of doing like a...
Jim is waving his hand.
I'm doing Thriller, basically, is what it looks like I'm doing.
Or a T-Rex impression.
T-Rex. Yeah. I don't know why I've gone like that. Okay, wow, I'm learning quite a lot, actually. This is really interesting. Yeah, I think I would panic. I think I'd panic quite a lot. I've done a little bit of like live TV stuff, and it was mostly panic, to be totally honest. You're really aware, aren't you? Of like, you're really aware of what you're doing.
It's true, but once you get into it, actually, once you get into it, you're fine, and you generally don't think about it, especially when I'm doing the weather day in, day out, the same sort of thing. But I noticed how different, how aware I was again when I had a year off work on maternity leave and I had to return to it. Although it was a completely different situation for me then, because I came back straight into working from home of the timing of when I came back. So I had to not only relearn my job again, but had to completely learn how to use a camera, lighting, do my own hair and makeup, everything, and set myself up in the garden and broadcast live. I had to completely learn that and look after a one-year-old
because her
nursery wouldn't open, and my husband was a key worker, so he was still going out reporting. So I was at home trying to feed a one-year-old, running out into the garden, doing a quick weather, coming back, doing some book story time or something, and then running back out again.
Wow.
In between it all for about 5-6 months until I was allowed back in the studio again.
That's full on, isn't
it? That is really intense.
That was an experience and a story to be told when she's older. She had no idea. A few times I was really worried because she'd be shouting in the background, "Mommy! Mommy, come back!"
Like, I've got to do the weather.
Yeah. Sometimes I would put the TV on so she could see me and put her in front of the TV while I ran outside. But I think that really freaked her out, actually. Yeah. What's going on? What's happened to Pepper?
Oh, wow.
All right, kids, listen up.
Yes, Mum.
Lunches need making, the dog needs walking, and there's a load of laundry to do all before school. Are we ready?
Yes, Mum!
You don't need to be a general to get everyone helping around the house. Indesit's push and go technology means you can easily start a quick daily cycle with just the push of a button. It's so easy to use, everyone can get involved. Not you, Max. Indesit. Do it together.
So were you? What were you having to record it on? What was the equipment? Were you sent stuff to use, or did you? Was it your phone?
I wasn't. It was live. I had to have a special unit called Live View that I had to connect up to a proper broadcasting camera, light up myself. And I felt bad for my neighbours because it was during like the hot months, they would all have their windows open through the night. I would be setting up outside at 4:30 a.m.
Oh, of course, because it's
Wow. Yeah, and I would probably be waking them up, talking to myself in the garden.
But they are getting live weather right there.
Exactly.
I mean, they can't complain. They're getting it right into their door.
I'm pretty sure I did annoy them because I remember after a month or so, every Thursday, I think it was, they would be mowing their lawn conveniently at 1:30 and at the top of the hour.
Very early in the morning to be doing that, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't say anything, could I? Because, you know, I was talking to myself from 4:30 a.m.
Low-level passive-aggressive neighbour wars. I'll mow the lawn. But then also I get a nice lawn after it, so everyone wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. That's a lot. So you were having to do all that technology stuff as well. Like, that's a lot to sort of, you know, you were like cast, crew, and director and
producer.
You know,
But I mean, I didn't mind. I did learn a lot of it during my degree, and so that was useful. And I like a challenge. In fact, I got to the point where I really liked it, and I thought, why don't I go on an OB outside broadcast myself? So I said to the editor of the programme, listen, it's a really nice day today. I've got all this kit. Be ashamed not to, you know, it's going to be the highest temperature of the year so far. There's a really lovely park nearby me. Can I go and do it there tomorrow morning? He's like, are you sure you're going to be able to set it all up? I thought, yeah, of course. If I can do it in my garden, I'll do it somewhere else. Yeah. So I just got up a bit earlier, chucked all the equipment in my car, went somewhere else, and was a bit of a one-man band. But I liked it. It was nice to have a challenge. You need that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
I like a challenge. So, yeah, I really enjoy doing that.
And then you're doing it, and then your neighbour's mowing next to you in the park. Oh, God. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Hello.
I think also, what a nice, you know, at such a challenging time, to have something to sort of focus on as well, I think it's probably quite good as well, maybe.
Totally. Yeah, no, totally. I was really grateful for it, actually. I felt bad for the people that actually had to have their maternity leave during the pandemic, because it's all those little things that you would take for granted. Although a lot of the time is at home with baby, you do these little kind of fun kind of you know, baby classes, like baby massage. Yeah. That's one that I always used to find really weird. Baby massage.
Yeah.
Poor baby's really stressed and needs a massage.
I know. When my wife told me she was doing baby massage, I thought, oh, that sounds lovely. That's gonna really help you relax and feel good.
Yeah,
said, no, not me, the baby's getting
yeah.
I was like, oh.
But they like it, don't they? If apparently very good for them.
It's good massage. For bowel movement and stuff. Apparently.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, it is quite a smelly experience. Mm. But you know, that gets you socialising with other moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can kind of share your experiences with other parents, you know, oh, are they sleeping well, they're not. And if during the pandemic, those who had their babies and even going into labour without birthing partner there until the very end, I can't imagine how they went through that. And then going straight into lockdown with a newborn. Like, I struggled with a newborn to begin with. First few weeks I was okay, but then I really needed my mum because I found it very, very difficult. And to think that I wouldn't have been able to have that I felt really awful for people that had to go through that. So I consider myself lucky that I was going, you know, yes, I had to work from home. I didn't get to see people as much, but I still got to work. And I did eventually get to, after a few months, to go back into work and see people, a very small number of people, because there was still a lot of people working from home. But, you know, I consider myself lucky that I was able to do that, for sure.
Yeah. My heart really goes out to anyone that had children during lockdown, because it's in fact my brother and his girlfriend did, actually. And so when our daughter was born, it was September 2019, so just before sort of lockdown, so everything was like fairly normal. But then obviously his and his girlfriend's experience was so different. He wasn't allowed to a lot of the screenings and stuff, and had to be, when she went into labor, really only there you know, at the important bits. And then, yeah, it was a very, very different experience. And as you say, then going into lockdown with a little one. Having a little one is so intense and tiring and difficult anyway. And when you chuck on top of that, you can't see other mums or you can't see your parents. Or we were very lucky. We actually moved in with my wife's mum, which is where we are now, quite early into lockdown. And she's been amazing helping out. She's been absolutely incredible. And I just, yeah, again, feel very, very lucky. But the pandemic really, I think, stripped back a lot of people's lives and made you really realize what's important and what isn't. And actually, and there's so many things that we sort of, I don't know, took for granted, because that makes me sound like I'm accusing people of stuff, but like, just I think there was a certain way of living life and then it changed drastically. And I think it certainly for me made me really sort of prioritize what's important. So yeah, there wasn't really a question of a point to the end of this, but just you were talking about sort of people having kids during lockdown, and yeah, my heart really goes out to them, because I think it was probably incredibly intense and difficult.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. It's difficult anyway. It's intense anyway.
Yeah.
And then being completely isolated from everyone, and those the type of people like your family. Like I had my mum, who was complete godsend. Like she didn't do anything in particular to help me, but she was, you know, it would literally be I'm exhausted. Okay, I'd feed the baby, put baby down, and she'd like, go and sleep now. And if she wakes, I'll bring her to you. Just to know that someone else is there so you could relax. Or she would just make sure that I was eating properly, because I wasn't able to have the time to do that while I had baby, you know. And not having someone there to help you like that is...
Well, because you don't think about... You're just thinking about looking after this small thing that's arrived. So you're not thinking about yourself. You're not really thinking about anything else. You're just so focused on this one little thing, and it obviously takes over everything. And it's just I was very lucky that I work from home, so I was able to sort of be around in the first sort of few months to be able to try and help out. Although it mostly involved sort of trying to feed and then just falling asleep on the sofa with her in my arms, of which there are many, many photos of. But yeah, it's an intense time. It really, really is. But a wonderful time. And it goes very quickly. She's two on Tuesday, which is mad. Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
My little one turned two in April. So, yeah, 2019 baby.
2019. As well. Yeah, just before. Yeah. Just got in there just before. Good time. The good timed baby. Yeah. The well-timed baby. It's been... I think anyone with a little one or little ones during lockdown, it's been an interesting journey. But as you said at the top of the show, like, I feel lucky that we had a garden space and grandma's here. And in fact, Maria, my daughter, started saying, because my parents live in Chichester on the south coast, and they're granny and granddad. And now whenever I open my laptop, because we've been Skyping them so much, literally to open my laptop, she goes, "Ganny granddad. Ganny Gandad." Oh. That's become now. So now I'm having to text my mum saying, "Can you do 5 minutes? Are you around for 5 minutes?" Just do a quick score. Actually, go on holiday with them next week, which would be nice. But so yeah, so she, that's quite nice, because I was worried that she wouldn't know her granny and granddad. She'd know grandma, because grandma's here, which has been amazing. Yeah. But maybe she wouldn't know granny and granddad as much, but because she didn't see them as much. But I don't know, kids are resilient, and kids they mop up and soak up so much more than you realise. And so yeah, the fact that she was asking for Ganny and Gandad was really nice. And then I know my daughter's going to be a performer, because then we Skyped to them. She went all shy, like she does with everyone, then started chatting a bit, and then went to go and get her keyboard and did like a David Guetta style DJ set for Granny and Grandad. Just not like hitting the keys on the keyboard, but just like pressing the demo button and then just like dancing next to it, David Guetta would do, and then hit a button, dance, and she put on this solo DJ set for
she was like hitting the samba button.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Well, it goes through these different, some of them are classical, which is very varied. But yeah, she just wanted to dance, and it's got a very cheeky...
What's a samba button? My demo, I had a demo button when I had a keyboard when I was younger. And it was just green sleeves. It was so boring.
Oh, that is... Well, and it's a green sleeve with all the different sounds, like, you know, in harpsichord, and then it would be in, like, violin, strings.
I've not thought about green sleeves since, like, GCSE music. But it was a very big part of my life up until the age of about 12 for some reason, green sleeves. But, yeah, never heard it again since. It only seems to sort of feature on school music syllabus for some reason.
Yeah. Was it from the Tudor times, Greenslade?
Well, yeah, I think it was.
Henry VIII wrote it.
Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he? Did he actually write the song?
That's the rumour.
It was his one hit wonder.
Yeah, he was performing it on, you know, the
top of the pops,
top of the pops back then, pulling people out of the crowd. You don't know the lyrics to Green Sleeves. There isn't any.
You're headed.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you like Green Sleeves? Yes. Okay, you're fine.
You survive.
I didn't know he was a musician, Henry VIII.
I don't think he was. I'm making up.
I know, I think it's a myth. I'm Googling it as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine him playing the lute or anything like that.
I thought it was... you can imagine back then that he probably claimed lots of things and people were just too scared to say no. Yeah, 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 you can write that. Yeah, yeah, you wrote that. Definitely, definitely. It's really good, Henry. Nice one. But no, it doesn't. It doesn't look like it.
Why was it called Green Sleeves? Did he just like look down and think, I'll call it Green Sleeves?
What am I wearing today? Oh, that'll
do. I was wearing Green Sleeves when I made that.
His follow-up hit, Red Hat, wasn't as successful.
No, I don't know what the origins of it are. But yeah, no, my keyboard had Samba button, which would be, so it had like different, I guess it was different rhythms. So Samba was one of them, and then it would have like Tango, and it would just be the drum rhythms on it. It must have been a drum pattern on it or something. So you could play.
What was your favourite instrument? Did you have music lessons at school?
Yeah.
Well, going back to Greensleeves, at primary school, I decided to do guitar lessons, and we had to learn Greensleeves. And I had this sort of ancient classical guitar that was, I think it was my nan's. And the teacher tried to tune it up, and she snapped all the tuning pegs because she'd over-tuned it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always panic about that. That gives me low-level anxiety when I'm tuning the guitar, that it's all going to snap in my face.
Well, don't just get
whiplash.
You're not...
Move out of the way.
Yeah, maybe get a tuner would be the answer to that. We'll sort out that anxiety. But yeah, so she ruined my guitar, basically.
Oh.
And I remember sort of slumping back home. I was almost like sort of dejected from the room. Oh, you can't play, so your guitar's broken. You might as well leave. And we were doing Greensleeves.
Well, we really shouldn't have brought a green sleeve, should we? It would be so traumatic.
So I returned to playing guitar in my late teens, and still play guitar.
I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but what's the tune of Green Sleeves again? I can't actually remember.
Do 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 do. I can actually play it on the guitar.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. Do it. Oh yeah. Actually, I learned to play it on the recorder. And I've still got my recorder. No, I'm not getting it.
Recorder was, again, so I don't know if you can hear this. Big at primary school.
No, we can't hear it at all.
Charles, I'll tell you what we'll do.
It's my electric guitar. I'll record it at the end, and then we'll put it on the end of the podcast.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it Izzy Sussex who we did that with? Played out with some music.
Yeah.
We'll do that again.
I can slightly hear it, but this isn't plugged in, obviously, because it's an electric guitar, so it doesn't really work.
Should we record a pretend reaction to it now that you can edit in after?
Yeah. Wow, wasn't that good?
That was amazing!
So good.
Well,
it's like I was with Henry VIII at the time. Wow, that was
great.
It
feels like I'm back in year eight music again.
Yeah, Henry VIII had a guitar just like that.
Oh, man.
Anyway, that was ruined. My guitar was ruined. So, yeah, that put me off for a few years playing, but not for good. What about you? Did you play anything, Nazanin?
No, I really wanted to play the piano, but my parents were like, we can't afford for you to do piano lessons. So I was given an electric keyboard for my birthday that had the demo, and I taught myself from listening to the demo how to play it. That's what the only thing I can play. Yes.
Have you got a keyboard now?
No, I don't.
Because we could have got you to record Greensleeve as well.
Oh, yeah. No, I did learn it on recorder. I learned Greensleeves on the recorder because recorder lessons at school were free, so I was allowed to do that. And I've still got my recorder because my mum found it at my house and
right,
went,
okay.
Oh, you want to take this? And, you know, so that my little one could play with it.
Worst sound in the world, recorder.
The worst.
Yeah. Don't let her anywhere near it.
And does anyone honestly play recorder over the age of 11? Like, is anyone professional?
There must be. I bet there's some professional recorder. I bet there are that join in an orchestra type thing. I bet the proms I bet there's some recorded
surely
recitals.
Surely you move on. You start record as like a gateway instrument, and then you move on to piccolo or something. I don't know. What would be next up the...
It's like cannabis.
Yeah, it's the gateway.
Before you go to like clarinet.
Try to record, see how you get on. Deep breaths. All right, do it with a friend. And then see what you move on to. Maybe move on to saxophone or something. I don't know. Move up the woodwind, I guess. I don't know.
Saxophone would be cool.
Yeah, I wanted to learn sax as a kid, but it's thing is, they're so expensive, those instruments to buy.
Yeah.
I think you have to, and the dedication to. I mean, like, I've learned to play the guitar, and the guitars are quite expensive as well. But yeah, I don't know. The saxophone feels like quite a big investment and commitment.
Yeah, my wife is a saxophone, and
she's got a saxophone,
and she learned saxophone, I think, to add to her acting CV, so that if
I can
any
act
jobs,
and I can play saxophone.
If any jobs came up, like we did a self-tape for her recently, and it was for she had to be a rugby fan or a football fan or something. I can't remember who it was for an advert, and she had to be like a really sort of passionate Wales, I think, for some reason, Welsh football fan. And so we got her to play saxophone in the self-tape. So this will be different. She's a fan who loves watching football, playing saxophone.
What was she playing? Like Baker Street.
Greensleeves.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Please, can the you Pink get Panther her to do Greensleeves as well?
Right, we'll have a guitar recorder, saxophone combo for Greensleeves.
What are you going to do on keyboards, Jim?
I do have my keyboard somewhere. I think it's through here. I could just do the backing chords.
Come on, you've got
something
to do it.
Or
at least a triangle. Do you remember the triangle? What was the point of that?
Yeah.
Again, that is something that is... Someone is employed in an orchestra to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ding.
Do you think it's actually really difficult, the triangle? Or do you think it's as easy as it
I
looks?
Reckon getting the timing right is. Because if you...
Yeah.
You've got one job, haven't you? So, you know, if you don't get it quite right...
Yeah.
That could ruin the whole ensemble.
And it's very obvious that it's you. It's not like there's five oboists. If the triangle's out of it's
what is someone what do you call someone who plays a triangle? A triangleist?
Well, I think you'd be a percussionist of some sort, would you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, it should be that. I'm actually gonna Google that to see if that is a word. Triangleist. No, it's not a word. Oh, that's disappointing. No, triangleist. No, triangle lists is what I've Googled. So, no, it's not.
Triangle lists?
Yeah, that's not the same.
But what are they? What's a triangle list?
I'm guessing a list of triangles.
Oh, I see.
It's literally just a list of
right.
isolated triangles. Yeah, it's a very math-based website.
What, isosceles and what are the other triangle names?
Just a normal triangle. Wasn't it isosceles? Wait, what's the one where they're all different
the same
lengths?
Yeah. Oh, different lengths.
Isosceles was two like long ones and one base.
I can't.
What was one where they're all different?
All I can think of
was Pythagoras right now, but that had to do with triangles, and didn't it?
Was obtuse something?
Obtuse.
Yeah.
We'll take that.
Possibly, yeah.
We've got two. Two out of eight or ten is not bad. maths was never my strong point. I failed GCSE maths twice.
Me neither.
Mm.
And like, who uses algebra now?
Exactly.
Come on.
No, I don't use... I don't know how, but I was in the top set at maths at my secondary school, at St. Greg's. And actually, it was, my main memory is that was the class I actually got really friendly with some of the geeky lads who I wanted to be friends with, and actually and still am today. So it's quite nice, actually. I don't remember being good at maths, although I do remember us trying to do rude words in our calculator, but I think everyone did that.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, boobies.
Boobies.
Or boobless, I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. Which is basically all you could do, the three words you could do.
Yeah.
But I do remember sitting next to a lad called Matthew Senior, who I still talk to on Twitter or something, who was a really nice guy. And, yeah, it actually was the blossoming of new friendships in that math class. So that was my friend Mike Hall, I'm still friends with now, actually was in that class. But they were all like the sort of geeky, nerdy, nice lads. And I realised in that math class they were more my people than the sporty... I was going to say dickhead guy. I don't want dickheads. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, just, yeah. I sort of found my people in that class. So, yeah. I don't know how I ended up in top set maths, but it was it worked out. Anyway, that wasn't the question. What was the question? Pythagoras.
What was the point of algebra?
Yeah, what was the point of algebra? Yeah. It's useless.
Yeah.
But I was
to make friends.
It was the algebra inside of us all along. That doesn't make sense.
But I was thinking with the weather stuff, when you're doing the Met the Met Office courses and stuff, we were learning about weather. Is there not lots of maths involved in that?
Sort of, but not really. You're looking at charts. So you're looking at satellite charts. We'll show you them. I mean, I'm not deeply into meteorology like a proper meteorologist is, but you're looking at satellite charts and seeing what cloud cover there is, the pressure chart, which will tell you, you know, where the wind direction is, so therefore if it's going to be a cold day, if it's not, etc. The radar showing you the rain, so no.
Do you,
the answer is no.
Do you
This one goes out to the upstarts.
To those that started before they were ready.
Because they knew if they hadn't,
they'd never have started at all.
We're damn good at this in this country. Over 2,000 businesses are created every single day.
Switch to Virgin Money to get 25 months free day-to-day business banking with our business current account. Search Brighter Business Banking today. Backed by the current account switch service. Excludes CHAPS payments, other terms, eligibility and limits apply. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Interesting talking to you today. I hadn't realised how much weather affects my life, and actually how much it affects my mood as well. And so actually, if I can be ahead of the curve a little bit. But it does. It actually, I think it's one of those things you don't, until you get caught out and it goes badly, it actually really can change and affect your whole day.
Because it's a conversation starter, isn't it? For especially in this country, it tends to be like a go-to kind of subject matter that we talk to people when we're sort of shooting the shit, or even, you know, even with people we know well, it's just, it's the thing that kind of gets, you know, things going. So I guess we take it for granted a little bit maybe as well, the purity of it. I mean,
absolutely. I think I wouldn't want to do the weather for a country that's always hot, dry and sunny, because that's so boring. I think it's amazing.
Well, it's like the Fast Show, isn't it? With Spain. Scorcho.
What was it? Scorcho.
Scorcho.
I think I have used that once before. But I think it's because it's so varied. It affects everything we do. Even when we were all in, going back to the pandemic and lockdown at home, it was I remember someone from the government, I can't remember who it was, contacting me, asking me if in my weather forecast I can make sure that people are responsible and don't go out more than once a day for 1 hour. So don't, and also not to be too positive about the good weather.
Oh no!
I didn't reply. I just thought, no, I'll just say the weather as it is.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give anyone any advice, but. It affects everything you do every day. Whether you think it does or it doesn't, if that makes sense. But you know what? I don't even have an umbrella on me. If it rains, I'll just let myself get wet. I don't care.
I get really annoyed.
I just run.
I quite like the rain, to be honest.
Yeah, it's quite like cleansing. It's refreshing. Mm. I just go out and I don't bother with an umbrella.
Oh, I get. It's like being on the. Never mind. I get really annoyed, and I feel morally superior to people if I have an umbrella and they don't. There's something wrong with me. I don't feel superior, but I feel proud of myself. If I've got, I'm painting myself a terrible person. I feel proud of myself if I have an umbrella and it's raining. I feel like I've.
You probably look quite smug as well, don't you?
Incredibly smug. Look at me.
Have you ever noticed, though, when it's raining and people like always have this reaction? I always find this funny. If you don't have an umbrella, people run and they squint their eyes as if squinting your eyes is going to protect you from getting wet.
I'm going to get less water in my eyes.
The goggles see nothing. My eye. Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, I live on a part of the coast which is quite windy, so there's almost no point in having an umbrella because it's going to be damaged quite quickly within the seconds of opening it. It's going to
have a cagoule.
Yeah,
is that what they call it still? Cagoule.
Oh, yeah. Cagoule. Yeah. Yeah.
I need to get,
and
cagoule.
Just embrace it. But again, like I say, like living down by the coast, it actually it's really like sort of embracing the elements. Going on the seafront when it's pouring with rain and windy, it's actually very nice. I like it. Very therapeutic.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It is. There is something, cleansing, refreshing, blow the cobwebs out a bit.
Yeah.
I like that.
Nazneen, I'm sorry that we've made you talk about the weather. So, talk about your job, essentially. So much.
I'm used to it. It's absolutely fine.
We said at the top, didn't we? Isn't it pretty annoying people talk about the weather? And we've spent about 45 minutes forcing you to talk about the weather. But I was just going to say one thing quickly. That actually it is, I don't know if it's just this country or not, but I do think actually the weather is linked to people's mental health a lot of the time. I mean, obviously you get SAD and stuff certain times of the year, and I find that I am someone that I think actually is really affected by the weather. So if it is gloomy, I genuinely do feel more down and more lethargic. And if it is a nice, hot, sunny day, not too hot, but, you know, one of those perfect sunny days with a bit of a breeze and stuff, there is more of a spring in my step. And it is, again, Giles was sort of saying, you know, maybe we do take the weather for granted and stuff, but it can change how you feel. And I guess as well, then, you know, in your role as well, you are delivering information that could actually change people's moods and how they feel for that day.
Mm. Absolutely. I completely agree. I definitely have an issue with, I think it's called SAD, seasonal affective disorder. Yeah. I have one of these special lights that... illuminate the room. I highly recommend it. That is really good. So during the gloomy days, especially during the winter months, I'll put it on and it lights up the room and it kind of emulates a day, a bright sunny day. Really makes a massive difference. I know people that work in the newsroom that also they're on early shifts all the time, so they don't see much sunlight. They deliberately have it on their desk as well, just pointing at them, because doing early shifts like that, you end up coming home, having a nap, and you're asleep during the daylight as well. You're not getting much daylight in you. Vitamin D is important, you know, and sunshine is important. And I do think it affects people more than they realize. During summer, I generally feel fine. During winter months, I find it a bit harder. So going out on walks and kind of just getting the blood pumping, brisk walks and stuff really helps. If it's a cloudy day, I find, you know, like a cloudy, gloomy day really gets me. I feel kind of almost a bit claustrophobic. It's really weird. I feel like I can't like breathe. I feel a bit kind of, I'm struggling that day. And I just force myself just to put on my shoes, get out, whatever the weather, and just go on a massive brisk walk for an hour. And I feel better after that. Not completely better, obviously, but it really makes a massive difference. And having one of those lights as well really helps me, I find, during those months. But you're right, it does affect a lot of people. I have a lot of people who tweet me about it as well. And I just, the only advice I can give is try and just hang in there. Try not focus on it too much, although it's easier said than done. Yeah. But it is important to have a bit of sunshine. In, you know, I think I don't know why, what the actual like medical reason is for a lot of people to feel like that when it's not a sunny day. But yeah, I definitely do feel affected by it.
I guess, I mean, yeah, I think like when it's overcast and you've got that low pressure, I guess is
maybe
you feel that physically, don't you? You feel that in your body. You feel that, you know, you can, it might, can make you like have, well, I get headaches sometimes when it's that that low pressure. So I guess it's that physical feeling maybe that it causes.
Yeah, a sunny day is definitely good, but some people I know get quite anxious when it's too hot.
Yeah,
I'm not a great hot person. So
yeah, I'm not into hot. Like 25 degrees, sunny, dry. Yeah. That's brilliant. Anything above that, and I just start feeling like I can't handle this. But warm summer evenings, having your supper outside, are the best. Yes. I love that.
Yeah,
that's really good. Really,
well, as you know, Nazneen, my wife and I built a pergola.
Yeah.
You know,
is it a pergola or pergola? I always thought it was
pergola. I think.
Ooh, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
You say pergola, I say pergola.
Let's call
it
all.
You're probably right. I'm not very good with pronunciation.
But yeah, having evening meals out there has been lovely, and also you get the right kind of light as well, because it's obviously gives you some shade, but yeah, you still get the light sort of beaming through.
It feels like you're on a holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
Being on holiday in your own back garden's very, very nice.
Well, we've all had to do that this year, really, haven't we? We had to sort of take holidays in our back gardens. If you're lucky enough to have one, we have had to sort make do, really. But yeah, I'm sure the Costa del Seaford is a lovely place to go on holiday.
It is.
I think it is regular. I don't know, actually. No, I'm really not sure.
Oh, no, you're right. No, sorry, I've put doubt into your mind.
Although, maybe
it probably is.
You know, pergola actually does sound a lot fancier, so maybe we could start a new trend to call them pergolas.
Well, some people were saying it was gazebo, and I'm like, it's not a gazebo.
It's definitely not a gazebo.
No.
Because, you know, you need, a gazebo is more like a tent. No, marquee, exactly. Not a tent.
Jim's looking out now by the
gazebo versus pergola. Yeah, no, there is.
What?
Pergolas.
Gazebo, isn't that, that's fully sort of covered?
Yeah, it's covered.
Yeah.
Whereas a pergola or pergola has sort of slats in it.
And I think so the light pergola looks more, it makes me think of a holiday.
Mediterranean.
Yes, it makes me think of being, yeah. It's got a holiday vibe to it, I think, actually, which is really, really nice.
Yeah.
Whereas gazebo has a sort of village fate vibe, I think, possibly.
Yeah, the kind of vibe like I'm having a barbecue, it might rain.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
The gazebo up.
Whereas in a pergola, you're like, well, if it could rain, it could not. I don't care. I'm not influenced by that kind of thing.
Half is going to get wet. The other half's not.
Wet in stripes. So, oh man.
Oh, Nazneen, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
And I've not Googled as many things during an episode before. I've got a lot of tabs open now. Green sleeves. SAD lamps.
Green sleeves must be done.
I've got so many things open. Yeah, and we are definitely going to end this episode with green sleeves somehow, which is should give me.
I'm going to record it as soon as we get off the air. I'm going to record it.
I'm going to dig out my recorder and record it for you.
Amazing.
Okay, I'll try and do.
So, Jim, no, that's, you can get the saxophone.
I'll get Miranda to get the saxophone out, and I'll get her to record.
Yes.
I tell you what, a saxophone
we'll
version of Green Sleeves
number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the
You've
music video could be like different shots of your pergola.
Yeah.
The music video would be
with an SAD light.
We'll get Robbie Williams to pull you up on stage for the music video.
Yes.
And have an awkward dance. That would be the video.
I'm down with that.
I'm really excited about hearing Green Sleeves played by a saxophone. That's what's really.
What are we doing this afternoon?
Getting excited.
I think we have time to do that.
Well, and not the recorder.
Like, no offence, but the recorder, I think that's a thing that's been done before. Like, green sleeve on a recorder, I think, has probably happened at some point, all right, in a school somewhere. But I don't think saxophone.
Charles, I'm doing a new tab.
And green sleeves
on
saxophone.
Green sleeve on
ever
saxophone.
Happened.
Here we go.
Well, someone on YouTube. Someone would have done it on YouTube.
Yeah, Johnny Ferreira has done it on YouTube. So I'll listen to that and pass it on to Miranda for a bit of
yes.
A bit of a tip on how to do it.
I'm excited.
This has been such a fun episode to record. It's been brilliant.
It's very random. You guys have made me. I think I've been smiling all the way throughout this. My face aches.
Oh, brilliant. Me too. It's but it helps. Episodes like this don't happen without a guest coming on and being fun to talk to, and
aww.
So thank you very much for being part of that. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
So
and like
much.
I said at the beginning, it's a pleasure and an honour. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
That's
I wonder if you might change your mind after you spent an hour with us. But it's good that you're still feeling that way.
Wait till you hear Green Sleeves on saxophone, then you can tell us.
Yeah.
It was until
Green Sleeves happened.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you.
There you go, Nazneen Ghaffar on The Blank Podcast. What a wonderful, wonderful person. Incredibly easy company, very funny. Indulged us in all our tangents.
I know, and we did go off on quite a few.
We did, but I like episodes like that. And,
me too.
Yeah, lovely person. And Tunbridge Wells alumni as well, so which obviously always goes down with me as well. So thank you, Nazneen, for coming on and just being being absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, she was absolutely wonderful company. Thank you so much, Nazanin. And yeah, it was just great. It was like a really good, it was just like we've always tried to make the podcast to be like a lovely chat over a cuppa in a cafe. That's kind of how it went. We went through all sorts of different lines of inquiries, as it were. And yeah, it was great. It was a really great conversation. So thank you so much for coming on and give us your time.
Yes, really, really appreciate it. And genuinely, as I said at the top of the show, actually, some very interesting to get the insight into the weather presenting, and also just all of it, really. I found it, I like getting the peek behind the curtains and people's jobs, especially if it's something that affects us all the time. And we do talk about, and actually during this episode, I realised how much we do, actually. I think it was just one of those things that's in our lives, but actually we do talk about it quite a lot. So yeah, very interesting. I'm now going to go and buy, I've got the app, the Met Office app, that's now downloaded. Nice. I'm going to go and buy an SAD lamp as well. And I'm off to go and force my wife to play Greensleeves on the side. So yeah, what an episode.
Well, and an update from our intro, I've managed to find the official account on Twitter of Craig Peter Johnston. Unfortunately, he hasn't tweeted since 2014, so
I'm not sure
he keeps his account up to date, unfortunately. So
do we have enough between us contacts in the football world?
No.
I think we might do. I've just thought of someone.
You might be able to. Well, this is the next mission, maybe for our 200th episode.
we'll bump off the Obamas and we'll do Craig Johnston instead.
Yeah.
Okay. If anyone out there listening knows Craig Johnston, please get in contact.
Yeah, we want to hear his story. We want to hear his story.
I genuinely actually really do. I think that'd actually be
fascinating. It would be really interesting. There's an amazing QED. Sorry to go on about him, but there is an amazing QED episode. I think you can find it on YouTube. It was a BBC documentary years ago. I remember watching as a kid, and it is Craig Johnston coming up with the idea for Predator boots. And it's fascinating.
I want to watch that. I'm halfway through at the moment. I started watching last night when I was putting Maria to bed. Norm Macdonald passed away.
Yes,
SNL comedian,
amazing.
Who I have to, shamefully, I didn't know much about, and now I've started watching clips of him online and listening to his. It's so funny,
very funny,
so funny. Yeah. So I was halfway through his episode with comedians getting in cars getting coffee with Jerry Seinfeld,
which is a great show.
Really
actually.
Good. Yeah, it's a great show. It's only 20-minute episodes, but I'm halfway through that. So I'm going to finish that, and then I'll watch the Craig Johnston documentary as well. So I've got a few things to line up.
Quality.
I've had such fun today. It's been a really, really fun episode. And I was about to Google something as well, and I've forgotten what it is. So after
we won't waste our listeners' time.
Sorry. I've got to go and tell Miranda to go and play Greensleeves on the saxophone. And then I've got to Google Predators or something. I can't remember. Anyway, thank you to Nazanin for genuinely being one of the most entertaining and just lovely guests we've had. And I think as well, Giles, like, I know we do a lot of these on Zoom, and we used to meet people, but I think you could tell that Nazanin would have been fantastic company over a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
In the studio or back in Nordic Bar or wherever. Mm. And it is a shame that we don't get to meet these people, but hopefully they're all people that we're now, hopefully at some point we can meet up with again. And
Well, Nazanin and I have both said we'll try and meet up in Tunbridge Wells at some point.
Oh yeah, of course.
She recommended a very good coffee shop called the Cake House, I think it's called. Actually went, Michelle and I recently had an evening in Tunbridge Wells for our anniversary. We stayed out overnight and had a nice evening, went for a meal, and then the next day we went and had a nice cup of coffee at the Cake House.
So where's that? Is that near the Pantiles?
It's in the Pantiles.
Is it? Oh, I mean, anything in the Pantiles is nice. Yeah. It's so lovely.
So yeah.
Have you ever been to, I'm so sorry for dragging this episode out. Have you ever been to, in the Pantiles, you can drink the spring? Because obviously Tunbridge Wells is built on a natural spring. Have you ever?
No, I haven't done that.
I've done it. It tastes disgusting. Don't do it.
The Tunbridge Wells natural spring.
It is gross. It tastes really coppery. And it's just, don't do it. Just enjoy the Pantiles. Go and have a nice cake. But don't. Pop over the road to the Forum. See what's on. But don't get in the water.
Well, it's funny enough. It's funny when going back to the conversation that you were having at the beginning of the podcast with Nazanin and sort of saying that, you know, Tunbridge Wells was a bit sort of fuddy-duddy and you want to kind of get out of it when you're younger. When I was in my late teens, started playing in bands, we were all desperate to come to Tunbridge Wells and play at the Forum, which I did with my band several times and got a little bit of a following over there. And has always meant that Tunbridge Wells has had a sort of special place in my heart.
So what year? I wonder if I lived there from 2008.
I was way before then.
I only lived there for a little bit. Actually, I just realised.
Yeah, it would have been late 90s, early noughties.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'd have been at school. I'd have been getting the bus.
You'd have been dreaming about going to the Forum.
I'd have been too young to go to the Forum. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. There was the promoter there was a guy called Lawrence, and he was really nice. It was all really young people that ran it. And it was cool because you go in, there was a really sort of cool vibe about it. And the sound engineers were all young, and they just kind of got like the rock scene and all the bands that used to come through there.
Even when I used to go there in 2008, it was still pretty cool place and pretty,
I think it still is,
run by young people. And I met someone and we used to, I've met a friend through, how did I meet? I can't remember her name was, but I think she's moved into my room after I moved out. But she knew people that worked there, so we go there for like drinks, after gig drinks and stuff. So cool place.
Yeah, really cool still cool. And I do a lot of work with a company in Tunbridge Wells. And there's some really cool small businesses and stuff. And there's a really good coffee house called Fine Grind. And they run out of the Forum now as well. So the Forum sort of does other stuff as well, not just
our UK tour, when we're obviously big enough, we will obviously play Tunbridge Wells.
Absolutely.
That'll be our homecoming tour. Right, let's end this episode. I'm sorry, mate. I have made us talk.
No, it's so fine. Much. I'm sure all the Tunbridge Wells listeners will love it.
I wonder if we must have one or two in Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah.
Surely. Shout out to Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah, tell us if you're listening from Tunbridge Wells, give us a shout out on Twitter.
Tunbridge Wells actually, it turns out, does hold a bit of a, with your music and my school, holds a bit of a special place in our hearts, actually, in this podcast, doesn't it? And we do, when people come on that are from Tunbridge Wells, it does actually sort of,
we treat everyone the same, place. but
obviously,
obviously if they've had some association with either of us in our good past, they're more special.
Exactly. They're just better. They're just better people.
I didn't want to say that, but...
Anyway,
you did.
I said it. Yeah, I don't care. Right, have a good week, mate.
Yeah, if you do want to get in contact with us, you can on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
You just do it.
At BlankPod, and you can also sign up to our Patreon, which Jim is going to read out because I always forget.
And I completely forgot to mention it, but yes, bonus content available on our Patreon every week at Patreon, patreon.com/blankpodcast. Please do sign up. There's all sorts of tiers on there, so get involved and we will love you forever.
Well, you get signed up. There's some really exciting tiers on there that Jim and I would like to get going on. So, do get interested and join up.
Indeed.
Do get interested and join up.
Get interested.
Fucking hell.
You sounded like...
Get interested, all right?
Someone
who can't present the program.
Going to schools and trying to get kids really into like anti-drugs. Get interested, kids.
Get interested.
Let's wrap up this
episode. Podcasts. Get interested.
Get interested.
I can imagine Ray Winston doing it.
Yeah, but you would with Ray because you feel threatened.
Yeah, well, of course.
Get interested.
Get interested. Bet 365.
Slack. Right. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to our patrons. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Nazanin. Thank you to you, Charles. Thank you to Craig Johnson. Thank you to everyone. And we'll see you again soon. Next week, in fact, on the Blank Podcast. Goodbye.